not only creating different literacy activities, but also making them more literate about their community and the resources that are available.
Teaching children about reading before they can read. And a new book details thousands of Southeast Tlingit place names. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Margaret Friedenauer. Those stories and more up next. The Haynesboro School Board meets Tuesday with a long agenda of items to discuss. The board will receive an update of the gym floor renovation. The project recently got a boost of $250,000 in the state capital budget passed by the legislature. Work is scheduled to begin on the gym soon after graduation on May 22nd. The board will also discuss a motion to approve the creation of an alternative education program for at-risk students and those needing more challenging studies. An alternative program would provide a classroom, computers, and would be staffed by a paraeducator. Also under consideration is a change in room assignments for several staff members and programs. Proposed changes include moving the superintendent's office, one of the principal's offices, the counselor's office, the community education room, and creating a classroom for the alternative education program. Superintendent Michael Beyer is expected to explain to the board how the new school funding bill passed by the state legislature will affect Haynes School. The board will also discuss new textbooks for several subjects and new hires for the next school year. The Haynes School Board meets Tuesday at 7 p.m. in the high school open area. Also Tuesday, the Haynesboro Assembly will hold a Committee of the Whole meeting. It's part of the Assembly's ongoing public meetings about the FY13 borough budget. Tuesday's meetings will discuss sections of the budget dealing with public works, public facilities, solid waste, ports and harbors, capital projects, road maintenance service areas, and parks. The meeting begins Tuesday at 5:30 p.m. in Assembly Chambers. The Children's Reading Foundation of Haynes held a celebration of the young child on Friday. The event had literacy-based activities and projects for kids under age 8, like painting, singing, and bookmaking. The Haynes Children's Reading Foundation is a local chapter of the national organization aimed at increasing early literacy. The foundation's local board chair, Linda Moyer, was at the celebration and working a station where children made rattles out of beans. As Moyer sang and strummed a ukulele, the children tried keeping beat with their bean rattles. She said the activities at the celebration were aimed at encouraging early vocabulary skills and other necessary skills needed to become a good reader as children grow.
Like, for example, you know, all those, you know, if you think about the, you know, written language is pretty new. But before, we all had songs. And songs are very rhythmic, and they have rhyme, and all that kind of stuff creates those neural networks in our brain. So you really need to be doing that stuff with your kids so that when they get to school, they're basically ready to start reading and writing.
The local foundation has been active since last fall. One of the group's recent projects has been the Haynes Passport Program. Children at Friday's activity could pick up a paper passport. They then take it to locations around town and do a quick activity like identifying a sign at the location, and then have their passport stamped. After they collect 12 stamps, they get to take their passports to the Haynes Mayor's office and get a certificate, congratulations, and a free book. Moyer said all these activities work toward the foundation's goal of helping parents prepare their child to read.
So that we did different activities and we made passports for the kids, and so different kind of literacy things that, you know, sort of model for parent and child, like doing artwork or singing songs, playing music, and then the public health nurse is here. It's not only creating different literacy activities, but also making them more literate about their community and the resources that are available.
The foundation hopes to sponsor an activity each month. Jeannie Kitayama, director of the foundation and early literacy coordinator with Haynes School, is also working to secure more grants for early literacy programs in the community. To find out more information, visit the foundation's Facebook page under Children's Reading Foundation of Haynes.
Now give a shake. All right. Awesome. You guys found it.
What's in a name? If it's a beach, or a mountain, or a stream, it can tell you what it looks like, or who's been there. It can also document a change of ownership, or the movement of a people. A new book from the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute presents about 3,000 Southeast Alaska Native place names. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld spoke with the authors and filed this report.
I'm standing next to the highway on the waterfront near downtown Juneau, where Gold Creek enters Gastineau Channel. But those are new names assigned by European explorers or their descendants. The people who lived here before called this place Zontakahini, flounder at the base of the creek. It's now the name of a middle school several miles away. The name, and hundreds more, have come close to being lost, replaced by Western labels. A new book from Sea Alaska Heritage Institute and the University of Washington Press preserves them on paper. Here's the title.
It means our, you know, that's why it says our grandparents' names on the land.
That's Harold Martin, who handled many of the book's research logistics. He says the effort started about 20 years ago when anthropologist Tom Thornton came to him with an idea.
We talked at length about what was happening, that we were losing our elders at a rapid pace. And every time we lost an elder, we lost a lot of history and knowledge.
They found funding and started turning to those with the knowledge. Thornton says they weren't sure how much they would find.
A lot of people thought these names were lost, but in fact, they weren't. A lot of them were documented in sources, but a lot of them were still alive in people's minds and memories.
The researchers were also careful to follow protocol. A wrong move, asking the wrong person, could have closed doors.
First thing we had to do was go out into the villages and get permission to proceed with the project. We couldn't just go ahead on our own. We had to get permission from the federally recognized tribal governments.
They took charts or maps to elders, pointing out places and asking for names. Martin found he remembered many from his childhood, sailing southeast with his fisherman father, conversing in Tlingit. The researchers found place names in historical documents, some with challenging spelling. They tried out pronunciations on traditional speakers to make sure they got it right. And sometimes they didn't.
Tom always liked to be real precise on his pronunciation, and there was one word that he tried to say that came out like the private parts of the human anatomy. And then another word he tried to say came out like the Tlingit word for lovemaking.
I always wondered why those old ladies were blushing. Maybe that's...
they laughed, and that a lot of fun.
In addition to the names, the book includes scholarly discussion of native languages and how their use differs with English. Thornton points out that Western names often commemorate a person, a politician or a scientist or someone who funded an expedition.
That's a strong tradition in America, but in Tlingit, you almost never see that. Usually it's the opposite. The people are named after the places rather than the places being named after the people.
Tlingit, Haida, and most other traditional names are descriptive. They can communicate geography or the relationship between features.
The example is Glacier Bay itself was supposedly named after the Tlingit name for the bay. But that name in Tlingit, Sit-i-ti-ge-i, means literally bay taking the place of the glacier.
Finding the place names is more than an exercise in cultural history. They also document human migration and changes in the landscape, such as an ice age or rising sea levels. Glacier Bay across Icy Strait from Hoona is a good example.
We learned that wasn't the only name, that there was an earlier name, Hutu, which was referenced just to the icebergs in the bay, and then the earliest name they had was Se-shu-yi, which was when it was just basically a muddy estuary of a small river, but people dwelled there.
The names also document the use of the land. Martin says that's helpful during subsistence or other political conflicts.
I ran into state agencies, federal agencies, and conservationists saying that there's no evidence that certain areas were ever used by natives for subsistence purposes. All they had to do is look at our chart, and they have their names. There's no place in Southeast Alaska that wasn't used at one time or another for one reason or another.
The researchers say the book is not complete. Thornton expects to find more place names from documents and memories, and that's not all.
And hopefully there'll be new names on the land, because that's a tradition that's very important in Tlingit and Haida, is to continue to name places.
Proceeds from the book go to the Heritage Institute to support further cultural projects. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, the part also known as Zontakahini.
This is Margaret Friednauer for KHNS News. Special thanks to Ed Schoenfeld for his report. Visit our news section online at khns.org to find links with more information about some of these stories. We're always open to your comments and story ideas. You can reach us by emailing news@khns.org. Thanks for your support.